You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
Good morning, I'm Julian Ng. Mobile payments in China were 50 times more than the United States as of the latest numbers. Recently, also Starbucks announced that payments will be accepted from WeChat Pay. We're also beginning to hear more about P2P e-wallets, robo-advisors. Welcome to the era of fintech or financial technology companies. Will they hurt the banks or would financial institutions fight back? Today, we're joined by David Fong, president of the newly formed Fintech Association of Malaysia. David, welcome to the show.
Morning, Julian.
What's the mission of the Fintech Association of Malaysia?
I think, as you know, fintech is a relatively new phenomenon in Malaysia and also much of Asia. And prior to 2016, not many people had heard of fintech. And then in 2016, we had a whole flurry of activities, announcements by the regulators. And even in the private sectors, many banks, accelerators, incubators were undertaking a lot of fintech initiatives. But many of these initiatives, whether by regulators or private sector, were very disparate. And there was no common platform or voice for the fintech community. And that was really the basis why a couple of people from the industry decided it was timely to set up a platform for the fintech community in Malaysia, and that's where we are. And our goal really is to be the national platform in Malaysia, which will basically encourage and promote collaboration between the various stakeholders in the fintech community. Our long-term goal is really quite simple. We want to create a vibrant and sustainable fintech community.
Okay, so what is your unique proposition? For example, what is the difference between your association and other government agencies? So for example, something like MAGIC or the Malaysian Global Innovation and Creativity Centre, which also wants to catalyse the startup scene. What kind of work will you do here that would be different from the kind of work that MAGIC will do? I suppose you're going to say that you're focused on the fintech, but then MAGIC also has that very broad agenda.
Well, I think there are many stakeholders in the fintech community. The fintech players are the obvious stakeholders, but there are also others who are not involved in fintech. These could be the service providers, and they are also the government agencies and the regulators. Yeah, so our platform really allows us to engage with all the various stakeholders. For example, since we started, we have been talking to Bank Negara's Financial Technology Enabling a Group, on how we can work together. We've also worked with partners in private sector. For example, early on this week, we partnered with one of the major banks in Singapore to undertake an event for startups. We like to think of ourselves as partners to all the stakeholders, rather being as one specific part of it.
Now, Bank Negara seems quite worried. I guess this kind of signals that are being sent out. Dato Mohamed Ibrahim, the new Bank Negara governor, expressed the fact that fintechs may take away 30 to 40% of banking profits. Do you think that these fears are justified?
Well, it's not just the Malaysian fear. Accenture, in their most recent report, have estimated that the Chinese banks may lose a third of their revenue to payment fintech companies by 2020, and that's only, what, 3 years ago away. So it's a real fear. I think it will happen faster in some countries like China than it would in countries like Malaysia. I'm not sure whether we will really lose up to 40% of revenue by 2025. It's more like a wake-up call to what could potentially happen. There's no doubt that a lot of services which the banks currently provide will be replaced by what the fintech companies are offering, simply because they are cheaper and in some cases there are no costs involved. They are more efficient and they are certainly more convenient. You can undertake your financial services from your home, your mobile device, or the mom and pop shop down the road. So you don't have to go to a bank branch anymore to do all these services. So it's pretty hard for a bank to compete with all this. So will they lose business? Yes. How much and how fast? Well, it's the million-dollar question.
Well, you know that when a startup happens, when a startups go through an inception, they need a lot of funding. And funding is what banks have. And in fact, they have got almost unlimited funding compared to a lot of these startups. Will the banks and financial institutions retaliate in the way that would make fintechs, you know, not compete very well, or in fact decimate a fintech, at least a big chunk of them?
Well, I think there are two ways to look at this. Number one, since the financial crisis in 2008, the banks have been very preoccupied with compliance issues and regulatory issues.
That was 8 years ago, right?
Yes, yes, yes. And
and 1 year is a long time in technology.
It is. Yeah. It is. And during that time, they've kind of taken the eye off the innovation ball. And suddenly they've woken up and seeing all these hordes of fintech companies at their doorsteps. And they realize they have a lot of catching up to do. And they see real examples of how their traditional businesses, including lending, which you would have thought that fintech companies couldn't do, can potentially be replaced and is being replaced by fintech companies. And we've seen the growth of huge P2P lending companies all over the world. So the banks have to wake up. But can the banks, they have two choices. They can either compete with the fintech companies, but you know the nature of the beast of banks are not innovative or nimble and quick. You know, they are big beasts. They take a long time to make decisions. And
many banks have got fintech funds, though, collaborative funds, and also outsource a lot of business to fintech companies, a lot of their operations to fintech companies. But if the fintech is going to hit at the core of banking's rice bowl, don't you think that they would not take it lying down?
They're certainly not happy about it, but I'm not sure what they can do about it.
They can throw money at the problem.
Banks are burdened by certain problems which don't apply to fintech companies. For example, they have huge legacy issues. IT costs, for example. Branch costs, for example. People costs, for example. So just by those examples alone, they naturally carry certain burdens which fintech companies don't have. Yeah, so I think the sensible banks are taking the view that it's better to work with these fintech companies, look at various different solutions, and adopt the ones that make the most sense for their consumers.
Today we have David Fong, President of the Fintech Association of Malaysia, on the grill. David, what kind of businesses are your member companies going into right now?
As I mentioned earlier, the fintech scene in Malaysia is relatively young, probably 2-3 years, and they have adopted different business models for a variety of reasons. But if you look at it globally, the spaces in fintech which are attracting the most investments are in P2P lending, payment solutions, and then beyond that, you have a whole host of other fintech ideas like blockchain and remittances and so on and so on. So,
investments and insurance?
Investments and insurance as well, yes. So in Malaysia, as you know, Securities Commission recently approved certain peer-to-peer lending companies, and in 2015, they approved the equity crowdfunding. So these are examples of fintech companies which are coming through. Some are local, many are foreign. Even in the local scene, we have many different ideas. Many of them are in payment simply because payment is the largest segment of fintech. And we have, not many people realize this, but we already have several large established fintech players in Malaysia that have already gone regional. So there is potential to grow that space.
So still on the idea of these skirmishes between fintech companies and financial institutions of old, where do you think fintech will make their money? They can either make money by charging the customer or the user directly, or the other part of it, as I've learned, some fintech companies are also having banks themselves as the customers. So where do you see the trend among your members?
I think many of the fintech companies do target banks as customers. That is a very logical process. But for me personally, you know, banks are tough customers. They take a long time to make decisions despite all the interest they are showing in fintech. And also, many people may not realize this, but I see a lot of internal resistance within the banks to technology generally and also to fintech specifically, and particularly how it may affect people's job. So you may have, on one hand, senior level management being very keen on adopting fintech, but the decision gets slowed down once you go down to a management level. So these are the inherent conflicts. I don't see a situation happening where banks will start competing with fintechs. That is not their nature. They are in it to find solutions for their consumers, and it's better to just get it from somewhere else and pay for it rather than try and develop it on your own.
We're taking a closer look at the fintech sector today on The Breakfast Grill, and we have David Fong, President of the Fintech Association of Malaysia. Up next, we'll have a closer look into the regulatory environment. David Fong, President of the Fintech Association of Malaysia, is on The Grill today, and we're talking about the rise of the fintech challenging the position of the banks. David, Bank Negara is going to come out with a concept paper, and it will be finalized soon. They have also set up the fintech, the Financial Technology Enabler Group, or FTEC. And at the same time, there is also in existence, under the auspices of Bank Negara, the regulatory sandbox as well. Now, do you think that all this regulation is a drag on the development of fintech in Malaysia?
The answer is it can be. Regulators clearly have the role of ensuring the financial integrity of the global financial system, and historically this was performed by the banks. Today we have fintech companies performing the same service, so obviously the regulators have to make sure that what they are proposing are also safe and secure for consumers and businesses alike. The challenge for the banks is that many of these solutions are based on technology, many often haven't been used before, like blockchain technology, and the banks don't really understand whether, number one, they are really safe and secure, how it can be abused. And so that's the whole basis for coming up with the regulatory sandbox, to enable these solutions to be tried and tested in a safe environment before it is unleashed on the world as a whole.
Do you agree with that kind of sandbox? Because this is like a barrier. It's like a passing exam. And if you don't pass the test, you're out of the game. And you're given a time limit of 1 year to fulfill what are easier regulatory requirements. And then after that, you're out of the game.
Well, most of the regulators in the developed economies like UK, Australia, Singapore have come up with sandboxes. So I guess that is an initial response. Whether it's the right one, whether it's too heavy-handed, I think time will tell, and obviously there'll be adjustments along the way.
What would the FAOM want? Would they want less regulation or more regulation?
I think obviously from the player's point of view, the less regulation, the better. For example, you mentioned this 1 year time horizon. I'm not sure whether the regulators understand that, what that means, because if you're a startup and you need to raise money for your business, how can you go to a potential investor and say, invest money in me, but in 1 year's time, I may not graduate from this so-called sandbox and your money is down the drain?
Exactly.
So these are some of the practical problems. As an investor, I'm not going to put money into a company that.
But those same kind of restrictions also exist in countries like Australia, which has a 6 month time frame, and the UK has a 3 to 6 month time frame.
They do.
So perhaps is this 12 month by Bank Negara a more lenient to the fintechs or the people trying to play in that sandbox?
One thing that we've seen in technology startups is sometimes the selling process can take a lot longer than you want to, especially when you're selling to banks. So it's very hard to imagine a situation where you put a timeline on that process, and it could be too soon or too late. It's very, very hard to say.
Okay, I guess also there is a bigger question of protection of consumer interests and also systemic integrity, because if you bring the banks down, the economy as a whole can suffer and can collapse. So are fintechs in a position to assuage those kinds of concerns, about consumer protection and the robustness of the financial system?
Well, we have already seen situations where there have been instances of fraud amongst fintech companies. One of the largest peer-to-peer companies in China, for example, was found guilty of being a big Ponzi scheme, and that was involving a lot of money. So examples like that really reinforce the need to make sure that these players are operating properly and the right kind of people are operating properly, and that's why they're being regulated. But having said that, I think regulators have to find the balance between innovation, which is necessary and important, anything that helps the consumer do transactions in a faster and more cost-effective way has to be good. But at the same time, at what cost?
Is it also easy to navigate two major regulators in Malaysia? I mean, you've got Bank Negara on the one hand making pronouncements on things like Sandbox and other financial institutions, and also the Securities Commission, which rules over things like P2P and the equity crowdfunding platforms.
It's slightly unusual. In most of the other developed countries, we have one authority, which is usually the central bank, overseeing the fintech. In Malaysia, we started off with the Securities Commission because I believe it was felt that equity crowdfunding involved more the capital market rather than Bank Negara. But only now, as we see more and more other fintech ideas coming through, that Bank Negara probably felt that it was timely, they also play a role in this.
Do you think that that should be an integrated governmental agency that's going to make regulations on fintech?
I think that obviously will provide more certainty and clarity. Because I think one of the challenges for fintech companies all over the world is regulatory uncertainty. They accept that there has to be some regulation, but to the extent that regulation can be clear and timely, because 1 year can be a long time in the life of a tech company. You know, it could mean life or death. You know, and sometimes because the regulators are not necessarily up to speed on or understanding of what a particular technology involves, it may take longer to make a decision.
Are many of your members tapping into the equity crowdfunding platform for funding?
Not as yet. Equity crowdfunding will tend to go for companies which are a little bit more established. It's almost like a pre-IPO step. Yeah,
and it's a funding amount of not more than 3 million.
That's right.
Ringgit.
That's right. A smaller amount. Yeah, but they need to have a prospectus of sorts with some ideas. I think investors need to. Those kind of investors are a different profile from the ones who are investing in fintech startups. Fintech startups are obviously a little bit more higher risk. The amounts they raise are lower than the ones that are in the ECF space.
So could you give us an idea of what kind of sizes do these fintech companies take? How much funding would they require?
Well, you know, fintech companies are no different from other tech startups. You know, typically they are not capital intensive, so they can start anything from 100,000 grand, and then they gradually, as the business grows, then they'll raise more and more. Today we are seeing companies raise anything up to 1-2 million ringgit as they get bigger. That's before the proper VC round coming in.
And where do the fintech companies get their funding sources?
Same source as the technology companies. It's the
VCs,
same pool of people. Yeah. You know, unfortunately, the VC industry in Malaysia, and I was quite involved in the VC industry early on, has not really made the sort of progress that we think they should have. And partly also because there haven't been many success stories. And to be fair, it's not just a Malaysian problem, but it's also in other countries as well. But because of the global interest in fintech, what we have seen in the last 2 years is that many VCs have emerged based out of Singapore and Hong Kong, and they specifically look for investments in particular areas of fintech which they're interested in. You know, in an ideal world, they would invest in a large regional fintech company, but because Asia is so many countries and disparate, they end up looking at investing in perhaps the number one player in Malaysia or Singapore or Thailand.
Talking about regional, what do you think of the potential competition can come from foreign players? For example, if we look at Uber and Facebook and Google, these are huge companies that operate in a winner-takes-all market, right? Do you see that with foreign fintech companies being global and being very gigantic and pushing up smaller local fintech companies?
Well, we are seeing, let me put it this way. Asia is a huge country. Yeah, it's got 60% of the world's population. It's the growth engine of the world in this century.
So the fear is that will an Alibaba come in and push out all these other things that smaller Malaysian fintechs are trying to
right.
do?
If you look at the first wave, internet boom, it was all mainly the foreign companies from the West coming out to Asia. But today we are seeing homegrown players like Alibaba, who have made it big in China, starting to expand beyond China. You know, so the answer is yes, they can't ignore China. China is too big a market. But if they do come out to Asia, chances are they would look for the countries which have a bigger market. No point coming to a market which is really small. Malaysia is not small, but neither is it big.
Well, for example, Malaysia has about 360 to 400 billion managed in the private unit trust industry, and EPF itself manages 700 billion ringgit. The banking system absorbs about 1 trillion ringgit in current and savings accounts. I'm sure the fintechs are salivating over the potential to mobilize this kind of money.
Well, if you look
it's not that small, right?
If you look at what Alipay has done in China, they've basically sucked out a huge amount of money out of the banking system overnight, you know, into their own wealth management company, which today has about 60, 70 billion US dollars only over a period of 4 to 5 years.
So the fear is that would an Alibaba put a lot of these small...
And all
these little Alibaba companies and others, Tencent and what have you, put all these little fintech companies, not only in Malaysia, but around the region, out of business?
There's no doubt that size and reputation does make a difference. But, you know, since the beginning of tech in Silicon Valley, and we're talking about 70, 80 years now, you know, there's always been room for the small boy and the smart idea. Mm-hmm. And I think if you have the right people and the right idea, there's always an opportunity for you to grow. The only limitation we have in countries like Malaysia where the market is small is that it's very hard to grow big and quickly, unlike if you were in China or in India or in the US. That is the only disadvantage that we have.
Do you see the need for a certain degree of localization which actually stops the onslaught of these foreign companies coming in?
No, not really. You know, at the end of the day,
For example, there are regulatory barriers as well, so that an Alibaba cannot start up financial institution like
Wallet, for example, in Malaysia.
Without a license.
Yeah. Yes, those are the regulations. And I think the regulator will have to take a view as to whether a foreign player, if they come to Malaysia, whether it would severely disrupt the financial system in Malaysia. For example, if Alipay were to do what they did in China, in Malaysia, or any other ASEAN country, for example, you could see a severe disruption. And while that may not necessarily be bad, I think the central bank would want to see a more orderly disruption rather than a chaotic disruption to the system.
Actually, on a more positive note, I suppose there is that situation where local players can be sold to foreign players for a lot of money.
Absolutely.
And your fintech members would be very happy about that.
Absolutely. And you know, as I mentioned, realistically, it's going to be very hard for a company in Malaysia or Singapore, for that matter, to become an Alipay. But you could be the number one player in Malaysia by far, you know. And there are companies who would say, hey, I'm happy to buy over the number one player in Malaysia, you know. And that would be a good exit as well.
And when those kind of sales take place, valuations would be of utmost importance. What kind of steps are you taking to help your members get the correct valuation? Because that's something always that's akin to pulling numbers out of the air, right?
I don't think it's the role of the association to help the members to get valuation, the best valuation. I think it is our job to make sure that they do as best as they can. We're talking about the whole ecosystem here, Julian, and you know, and there are many players who are, in theory, in a much better position to help those companies, the mentors, the investors, the VCs, whose role is supposed to add value to these companies and help them achieve the maximum valuation. Because once you're an investor, then your interests are aligned. You know, our role is more of a facilitator to make sure that all these relevant parts of the ecosystem exist for them to do as best as they can.
David, do you expect to see any unicorns coming out of the fintech scene in Malaysia?
It will be a challenge, as I mentioned, simply because our home market is very small. We have seen some Malaysian fintech companies become quite big and go regional. But to become really an Alipay kind of company, I would love to see one, but I think it's going to be challenging.
Yeah. Thank you so much for your time. And that was David Fong, President of the FinTech Association of Malaysia, giving us his observations about what will happen to the FinTech sector going forward. I'm Julian Ng for BFM 89.9.
That episode of BFM Breakfast Grill was brought to you by U-Mobile, where data hearts you.